Good afternoon and welcome to Sundays with Andy. I'm Leslie Merle, Assistant Curator of Education, and it's my pleasure to welcome you to this artist-led tour series. In case you're new, this is our series of artist-led tours. We meet at 1 p.m. every Sunday during the run of the exhibition, Andy Warhol, The Last Decade. Today, it's my great pleasure to introduce the artist, Margaret Meehan. You probably remember her work from the 2007 exhibition here called Pretty Baby. She had the installation Innocence and Otherness with the very sweet, small sculptures of children with their obvious medical abnormalities. You probably also saw her show or her work in the recent exhibition Modern Ruin at a now demolished bank over in Dallas, or at Death of a Propane Salesman, the recent or last year's exhibition at Fort Worth Contemporary Arts on the TCU campus. She's also shown at Road Agent, CAD Art Lab, and Soil Gallery in Seattle. Her curatorial projects include Feral Nature, which was at the University of Texas at Dallas, the Art Gallery in Richardson from 2006, and Menagerie, a traveling exhibition from 2000 to 2001 that went from the Kirkland Art Center in Washington State to the Cove Vivant Gallery in Tampa, Florida, to Jean Roche in North Carolina. Her recent awards include the Dozier Grant from the Dallas Museum of Art in 2008 and the Art Pace Shortlist in 2007. And those are just the recent ones because I want to give her as much time as possible. Please join me in welcoming Margaret Meehan.
Thank you. So just a few words before I get started. I'm kind of approaching this artist talk in a little bit of a different way. This talk was inspired by Ken Goldsmith's Tuesday evening lecture on Warhol and his interest in the man more through television, through the idea of celebrity, gender, sexuality, basically that he was interested in Warhol for everything except the paintings. And I'm also kind of referencing a performance by Andrea Fraser, which complicates the form of the gallery talk, which is essentially what I'm doing for you guys right now. And what she did was she built on what Warhol frequently did in his interviews, reflecting questions back to society and to the viewer. So before I get started, I want you to know how I kind of came about this talk slash performance that I'm going to do for you. And what I've done is I've amassed and assembled multiple sources in a very Warholian sort of way. And I'm trying to create a non-linear narrative as we start to move through the galleries and look at all of the work. It's a reflection of Warhol in his own words as well as other people's words. And those sources that I'm referencing are Andy Warhol himself. And those words are coming from his diaries and the book, The Philosophy of Andy Warhol. I'm also referencing Kenneth Goldsmith's book, I'll Be Your Mirror, The Selected Andy Warhol Interviews, Douglas McGill's obituary for Andy Warhol in the New York Times in 1987. I'll be referencing some lyrics of songs by the Velvet Underground, Andy's close friend and collaborator, Billy Neame, Andy's attempted assassin, Valerie Serranos, from the movie I Shot Andy Warhol, the artist and activist, Keith Haring, Lou Reed, the critic, Robert Hughes, Leo Castelli, who was Warhol's dealer for 23 years, the dancer Martha Graham, the sculptor George Siegel, and the song Andy Warhol, which was originally recorded by the band Bauhaus and famously covered by David Bowie, so if any of you guys remember that. And last but not least, I will be referencing Songs for Drella, which was a conceptual album by Lou Reed and John Cale, who were formerly members of the Velvet Underground. So on that note, why don't we step into the first gallery and we'll get started. I'm glad you guys are here. Well, we debated this, but Terry's voting for this, so here we go. We'll make it a true performance. Okay. I am a deeply superficial person. If you want to know all about Andy Warhol, just look at the surface of my paintings and films and me, and there I am. Nothing left behind. I'll be your mirror. Reflect what you are. In case you don't know, I'll be the wind, the rain, and the sunset. The light on the door to show you that you're home. When you look, the night has seen your mind, that inside you're twisted and unkind. Let me stand to show that you are blind. Please put down your hands, because I see you. I find it hard to believe you don't know the beauty of you, but if you don't let me be your eyes, a hand in your darkness, so you won't be afraid. When you think the night has seen your mind, that inside you're twisted and unkind, let me stand to show that you are blind. Please put down your hands, because I see you. I'll be your mirror. Reflect what you are. Andy Warhol, a founder of pop art whose paintings and prints of presidents, movie stars, soup cans, and other icons of America made him one of the most famous artists in the world, died yesterday. He was believed to be 58 years old. The artist died at the New York Hospital, Cornell Medical Center in Manhattan, where he underwent gallbladder surgery Saturday. His condition was stable after the operation, according to the hospital spokesman, but he had a heart attack in his sleep and died around 5:30 a.m. Though best known for his earliest works, including his silkscreen image of a Campbell soup can and a wood sculpture painted like a box of Brillo pads, Mr. Warhol's career included successful forays into photography, movie making, writing, and magazine publishing. He founded Interview Magazine in 1969, and in recent years, both he and his work were increasingly in the public eye, on national magazine covers, in society columns, and in television advertisements for computers, cars, cameras, and liquor. When I got my first television set, I stopped caring so much about having close relationships. I'm the type who'd be happy not going anywhere as long as I was sure I knew exactly what was happening at the places I wasn't going to. I'm the type who'd like to sit home and watch every party that I've been invited to on a monitor in my bedroom. Employees make the best dates. You don't have to pick them up, and they're always tax deductible. I had a lot of dates, but I decided to stay home and dye my eyebrows. I have social disease. I have to go out every night. If I stay home one night, I start spreading rumors to my cats. Sex is more exciting on the screen and in between the pages than in between the sheets. In all these endeavors, Mr. Warhol's keenest talents were for attracting publicity, for uttering the unforgettable quote, and for finding the single visual element that would most shock and endure. That his art could attract and maintain the public interest made him among the most influential and widely emulated artists of his time. Once you got pop, you could never see a sign again the same way again. And once you thought pop, you could never see America the same way again. What's great about this country is that America started the tradition where the richest consumers buy essentially the same as the poorest. During the 1960s, I think people forgot what emotions were supposed to be, and I don't think they ever remembered. It's the movies that have been running our lives, have been running America ever since they were invented. They show you what to do, how to do it, when to do it, how to feel about it, and then how to look at how you feel about it. Although himself shy and quiet, Mr. Warhol attracted dozens of followers who were anything but quiet, and the combination of his genius and their energy produced dozens of notorious events throughout his career. In the mid-60s, he sometimes sent a Warhol lookalike to speak for him at lecture engagements, and even in his Manhattan studio, The Factory. This was a legendary hangout for other artists and hanger-ons. Everyone will be famous for 15 minutes. I'm bored with that line. I never use it anymore. My new line is, in 15 minutes, everyone will be famous. Valerie Solanas, give me 15 cents and I'll give you a dirty word. Maurice Giraldos, what's the word? Valerie Serranos, men. In 1968, however, a would-be follower shot and critically wounded Mr. Warhol at the factory. It took more than a year of recuperation, and he was back in the studio. Before I was shot, I always thought that I was more half there than all there. I always suspected that I was watching TV instead of living life. Right when I was being shot, and ever since, I knew that I was watching television. It was the cardboard Andy, not the Andy I could love and play with. He was so sensitized, you couldn't even put your hand on him without him jumping. I couldn't even love him anymore because it hurt him for me to touch him. Mr. Warhol returned to his career, which he increasingly devoted to documenting with Polaroid pictures and large silkscreen prints, political and entertainment figures. He started his magazine and soon became a fixture in the fashion and jet-set social scene. My idea of a good picture is one that's in focus and of a famous person. In the 1980s, after a relatively quiet period in his career, Mr. Warhol burst back into the contemporary art scene as a mentor and a friend to young artists. Those artists included Keith Haring, Kenny Scheiff, and Jean-Michel Basquiat. With Jean-Michel Basquiat, Mr. Warhol collaborated on a series of paintings in which he shunned mechanical reproduction techniques and painted individual canvases for the first time since the early 1960s. Andy was a workaholic and loved the added incentive of Jean around. They exercised together, ate together, and laughed together. The great thing about visiting Andy was that he was always working. Whether or not there were many things and endless interruptions going on from phone calls and visitors, there was still a sense that in between, a lot of things were getting done. There were always new paintings leaning against the wall, new piles of Polaroids, and new clippings of photographs of prospective projects. Jean brought back a much-needed touch of mischief that had been disappearing from the factory's agenda. But he also brought an atmosphere of obsessive production and left its mark long after the collaboration had stopped. I suppose I have a really loose interpretation of work, because I think that just being alive is so much work at something you don't always want to do. The machinery is always going, even when you sleep. I watched him like a hawk, but it was pretty much always kind of the same. He was very loose about some things, the angle, who actually took it. No one knows who painted what for him anymore. He's probably laughing himself sick. And he would take other people's photos and he would make them really great. He used to say, if you don't work hard enough, you don't work hard enough. You're lazy. You don't work hard enough. What's wrong with you? What's wrong with you? You're not working. You should work harder. You don't work hard enough. You're lazy, Lou. He never denied his obsession with art as a business and with getting publicity instead. He proclaimed them as philosophical tenets. I'll endorse with my name any of the following: clothing, AC/DC, cigarettes, small tapes, sound equipment, rock and roll records, anything, film equipment, food, helium, whips, money. I've decided something. Commercial things really do stink. As soon as it becomes commercial for a mass market, it really stinks. An artist is somebody who produces things that people don't need to have. As widely known as his art and his own images were, however, Mr. Warhol himself was something of a cipher. He was uneasy while speaking about himself. The interviewer should just tell me the words he wants me to say, and I'll repeat after them. Being born is like being kidnapped and then sold into slavery. The earliest facts of his remain unclear. He was born somewhere in Pennsylvania, either in 1928, 1929, or 1930. According to three known versions of his life, the most commonly accepted date is August 6, 1928. The son of immigrant parents from Czechoslovakia, his father a coal miner, the family's name was Warhol. He immediately set out for New York, where he changed his name to Warhol and began a career as an illustrator and a commercial artist. By the late 1950s, he increasingly considered trying his hand at making paintings. Success, however, was not immediate. In 1962, the dam broke, and Mr. Warhol's first exhibition of the Campbell Soup Cans at the Ferris Gallery in Los Angeles happened. Other pop artists also began to achieve prominence around the country at the time, and the movement was born. Though some of Mr. Warhol's first pop art paintings had drips on them, evidence that the painter's hand had left its mark on the work, by 1963, Mr. Warhol had dispensed with the brush altogether. Instead, he turned to exclusively hard-edged images made in the medium of silk screen print, which made a depersonalized image that became Mr. Warhol's trademark. Painting a soup can is not in itself a radical act. What was radical in Warhol was that he adapted the means of production of soup cans to the way we produced paintings, turning them out en masse, consumer art mimicking the process as well as the look of consumer culture. You grew up in a house near Pittsburgh without indoor plumbing, and one day an eccentric relative gives you a painting of an ordinary soup can saying, "Someday it will be worth $1 million." Imagine. On an amber afternoon earlier this month, he remembered the words of his uncle Andy, which have passed now through four decades of family lore. In 1961, when Andy Warhol, as the uncle called himself, painted Campbell's Soup Can Pepper Pot. He was a commercial artist trying to break into the fine arts. The painting, one of his first soup cans, was a present for his oldest brother. It is on the small side, just 20 by 16 inches, Mr. Warhol let out a deep breath. The previous night, after more than a decade of family discussions, he and his six siblings had sold the painting at auction. It turned out that their uncle had underestimated its future value. The bidding closed at $1,219. Instead of exhibiting it in galleries or museums, the seven Warhol children, now ages 41 to 59, took turns bringing it in to show and tell. They lugged it on the school bus in brown paper bags. Between school functions, it found its place in the hectic household. "At home, we'd lean it up against a table or against the wall," said James Warhol, the fifth of the seven siblings. "It was easy to pick up, and you just took it anywhere." We didn't understand it, but we knew it was important. We had deep respect for Andy. Even when he was doing illustration work, he had a giant house on 89th Street and lived a wealthier lifestyle than he had done in Pittsburgh. The Warhol house where Pepper Pot made its home was far from glamorous. My dad was a frustrated artist. Very creative, but he had all of us kids. We lived in a two-bedroom house with an outhouse and a water pump in the kitchen. Finally, my dad put in a bathroom. I'm afraid that if you look at something long enough, it loses its meaning. Art? That's a man's name. For sport, the children used to play masquerade in Warhol's old wigs, each originally intended for a different social function in the Warhol life, which he handed down to his oldest brother. On some days, the house would be filled with children in strange white mop heads. On school breaks or weekends, the children looked forward to their trips to see their famous uncle in New York. We'd always come up by surprise, said Paul Warhol, who was 6 years older than Andy. He remembered loading James and the four or five siblings in the car, whoever or how many lived in the house at the time, and showing up at his brother's house unannounced. Warhol would put the children to work immediately. They'd be stretching canvases or coloring with huge paint-by-number brushes. He was an incredible workaholic with an incredible work ethic, very old country. He always wanted to make sure we were doing something. As children, James and his brothers and sisters played carelessly among portraits of Marilyn Monroe and other works that are now landmarks of post-war art. When one of his brothers accidentally damaged a canvas from Warhol's series of tap-step diagrams, his uncle was upset only for a moment. Then he went upstairs, and an hour later, he came back down with another painting, which he had just done. Those are now worth millions of dollars. Money and Warhol's relationship to it were always mystifying. He remembered the first time his brother placed a painting in an exhibition. Andy came home one day and said, "A man offered me $75 for this painting, but I told him I wanted $90. I said, "Andy, how could you do that? We need the money." "Gee, back in 1946, 1947, when you needed a dollar, you sold whatever you could." I said, "You'll paint another, you'll paint more things, sell the painting." Being good in business is the most fascinating kind of art. Making money is art, and working is art, and good business is the best art. I'd ask around 10 or 15 people for suggestions. Finally, one lady friend asked the right question. "What would you like to paint? What do you love the most?" That's how I started painting money. As Warhol children got older, they took turns hanging Pepper Pot in their homes. But the rising value of the painting was a mixed blessing. It became too expensive to insure, and neither the siblings nor the parents wanted to live with the security systems necessary to protect it. In the end, it priced itself out of their lives and homes. It was just impractical. Most members of my family have it tough. Two of my brothers have junkyards that they're still struggling to keep open. My sisters work odd jobs. It's not like being related to Andy Warhol made us any wealthier. It didn't. He said he hoped that Pepper Pot, which was bought by an anonymous bidder, would find its way to the museum. The siblings and their parents will divide the money 9 ways, he said. Though the family was grateful for the money, he could not help having mixed feelings about the sale. "I'm going to miss it. I told my brothers and sisters, if you wanted to go out and buy a piece like this, you'll never find it. And even if you could..." His voice trailed off, not so much in regret as in wonder. His uncle's 1961 watchwords about the painting's value had come true. The truth, for those living with it, held a heaping helping of absurdity. They couldn't keep it anymore. It was too valuable. The story of Pepper Pot had gone from the quotation rights of grade school to the abstract numbers of the marketplace. Warhol would have appreciated this twist. Of all the painters of his generation, he's still the one most influential on younger artists. He's a real guru. When I first met Andy, he confided to me that he was born in Pittsburgh, as I was, and that when he saw me dance for the first time Appalachian Spring, it touched him deeply. He touched me deeply as well. He was a gifted, strange maverick who crossed my life with great generosity. His last act was the gift of 3 portraits he donated to my company to help my company meet its financial needs. He had this wry, sardonic knack for dismissing history and putting his fingers on public taste, which to me was evidence of living in the present. Every generation of artists has this huge problem of finding their own language and talking about their own experience. He was out front with several others of his generation in pinning down how it was to live in the 60s, the 70s, and the 80s. His experimentation with underground films began the 60s, an interest that culminated in widespread notoriety, if not overwhelming box office acclaim.
Thank you.
His experimentation with underground films began in the 60s, an interest that culminated in widespread notoriety, if not overwhelming box office acclaim. This is Andy Warhol, and it takes one, take one. It's Warhol, actually. What did I say? Hole. It's a hole, as in holes. Andy Warhol. Wah, Andy Warhol, Andy Warhol, he. Like hole, hub. Are you ready? Yeah. Like to take a cement fix, be a standing cinema, dress my friends up for the show, see them as they really are. Put a peephole in my brain, two new pence to have a go. I'd like to be a gallery, put you all inside my show. Andy walking, Andy tired, Andy take a little snooze. Tie him up when he's fast asleep, send him on a pleasure cruise. When he wakes up on the sea, he's sure to think of me and you. He'll think about paint, he'll think about glue. What a jolly, boring thing to do. Andy Warhol looks a scream, hang him on the wall. Andy Warhol, silver screen, can't tell them apart at all. Andy Warhol looks a scream, hang him on the wall. Andy Warhol, silver screen, can't tell them apart at all. In the 1970s, recuperated from his near-fatal gunshot wound, Mr. Warhol settled down to sustain a creative period in which his fame as a society figure leveled off. But his output, if anything, increased. Working most often in silkscreen prints, he made series after series of pictures of political and Hollywood celebrities, including Mao, Liza, Jimmy, and Russell Banks. In 1975, he published The Philosophy of Andy Warhol, From A to B and Back Again, a collection of statements and epigrams that excluded his commentary, that pulled out his advice and views on art. In his glancing and reticule style, Mr. Warhol wrote about subjects ranging from art to money and sex. Checks aren't money. Fantasy love is much better than reality love. Never doing it is much more exciting. The most exciting attractions are between two opposites that never meet. In the 1980s, Mr. Warhol became more active in commissioned art projects and a variety of other commercial activities. In 1983, he made a series of prints based on animals of endangered species. That was the first show that was shown at the American Museum of Natural History, a near exception. Although some of his later art projects seemed to diverge from their calculating approach and to be motivated in part by social concern, Mr. Warhol generally avoided any such suggestions. He came closest to making an exception in 1985 when he exhibited a group of prints of clowns, robots, monkeys, and other images he had made for children at the Newport, Rhode Island Art Museum in 1985. It's just that the show's for children, he reported. I wanted it to be arranged for them. The Newport Museum agreed to hang all of the children's pictures at levels that were only kid-friendly and that kids could really see. In his book, The Philosophy of Andy Warhol, the artist wrote a short chapter entitled Death. That consisted almost entirely of these words. I'm so sorry to hear about it. I just thought that things were magic and that it would never happen. Dying is the most embarrassing thing that can ever happen to you because someone's got to take care of all of your details. I always wished I'd died, and I still wish that because I could have gotten this whole thing over with. I never think that people die. They just go to department stores. I never understood why when you died, you just didn't vanish. Everything could just keep going on the way it was, only you weren't there anymore. I always thought I'd like my own tombstone to be blank, no epitaph and no name. Well, actually, I'd like it to say Figament. Mr. Elliot M. Gross, the chief medical examiner for New York City, said an autopsy on Mr. Warhol would be conducted today. Dr. Gross explained that deaths occurring during surgery or shortly after surgery are considered deaths of an unusual manner. It was an unexplained death of a relatively young person in apparently good health, he said. Mr. Warhol is survived by two brothers, John Warhol and Paul Warhol, both of Pittsburgh. Drella, Warhol's nickname, is a blend of the words Dracula and Cinderella. The album marked an end to a 22-year estrangement. The album took the shape of a Warhol biography. On the album, Reed sings of his love for his late friend, but also criticizes both the doctors who were unable to save Warhol's life and Warhol's would-be assassin, Valerie Solanas. Andy, it's me. Haven't seen you in a while. I wished I'd talked to you more when you were alive. I thought you were self-assured when you acted shy. Hello, it's me. I really miss you. I really miss your mind. I haven't heard ideas like that in such a long, long time. I love to watch you draw and watch you paint, but when I saw you last, I turned away. When Billy Name was sick and locked up in his room, you asked me for some speed. I thought it was for you. I'm sorry that I doubted your good heart. Things always seem to end before they start. Hello, it's me. That was a great gallery show. Your cow wallpaper and your floating silver pillows. I wish I paid more attention when they laughed at you. Hello, it's me. Pop goes pop artist, the headline said. Is shooting a put-on? Is Warhol really dead? You get less time for stealing a car. I remember thinking as I heard my own record in a bar. They really hated you. Now that's all changed. But I have some resentments that can never be unmade. You hit me where it hurts. I didn't laugh. Your diaries are not worthy of an epitaph. Oh, well now, Andy, guess we've got to go. I hope some way, somehow, you like this little show. I know it's late in coming, but it's the only way I know. Hello, it's me. Good night, Andy. Goodbye, Andy. Goodbye. Life is a series of images that change as they repeat themselves. Gee, it's just so fabulous. Hi, you guys. That's all. Thanks.